Welcome to Arin Podcast Luxembourg, our podcast channel that explores the latest legal and regulatory updates in Luxembourg by weighing in on our experts' profound experience. We are introducing our new podcast series, All About Private Debt. Our experts from different practice areas come together with guest speakers to debate hot topics in the private debt market.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of our Private Debt Podcast series. My name is Nicolas Bouvray. I'm a partner at Arendt in our fund formation group. The subject of today is ESG and how it applies to the private debt fund industry. Sustainability has become a key focus across all asset classes. And as private debt is getting more traction and becoming an essential part of how the economy is financed, private debt funds play an increasingly important role in shaping and defining the fund industry's approach to sustainability. And this impacts all levels, institutional investors, asset managers, and portfolio companies. Now, with me today to talk about this subject, I have the pleasure of welcoming Vincent Lemaître. Vincent is head of ESG for private debt at Tikehau Capital. He's responsible for designing and implementing Tikehau's ESG strategy on its private debt platform. Tikehau has above 34 billion of AUM and has developed a wide range of expertise across all private assets, including obviously private debt. I have also with me Valérian de Jambline. Valérian is an advisor at Arendt Regulatory and Consulting, specializing in sustainable finance. He provides advice to asset managers on many ESG-related matters with a focus on the various ESG-related regulations, including SFDR and the EU taxonomy. Thank you both for joining us. I would like to start with this question. What, in your view, are the reasons for the surge in ESG integration practice in the private debt markets? Maybe, Vincent, you could start with that question.
Okay, thank you very much, Nicolas, and good afternoon, everyone. And thank you for having me in your podcast. So on this point, just to give you a bit of context, according to a research from PwC of October last year, sustainability asset under management could reach between 80 billion and 120 billion by 2025 on the private debt market in Europe. So sustainability AUM could represent between 29 and 39% of European entire private debt markets. So these demonstrate that the shift has already started from my point of view. So this expansion is, to me, mainly driven by market sentiment on the part of both investors and borrowers. So sustainability investing has become a critical element of portfolio construction for LPs. We have seen LPs, you know, going more and more educate on this topic. They view ESG factors as additive to investment performance, and they factor more and more ESG issues into their investment decisions, which is very good news. This reflects growing global concern about climate change. And investor concerns, as I just mentioned, are just the mirror of the societal shift magnified by the current environment, societal and health crisis. You know, what we experienced over the last 5 years with COVID, hashtag MeToo movement, and now the war in Ukraine are definitely drivers for addressing corporate sustainability challenges. People want to know where their money is going and buy product with positive impact. So on one side, to sum up, when corporates are looking for financing, they are increasingly seeing value in taking the ESG route in order to keep their stakeholders happy, while at the same time, more providers of capital are being pushed towards lending in line with what I call ESG principles. So these two factors create a perfect alignment between providers and what would be recipients of ESG finance. And another major catalyst in this growth of ESG finance is obviously the regulatory framework. And I may leave to this point to Valérian.
Yeah, thank you. So indeed, I also think that that a good reason for this evolution comes from the regulatory ecosystem, which has dramatically evolved in the past few years, especially in Europe, you know, with the ambitious sustainable finance package of the European Commission. I'm thinking, for instance, about the SFDR level one, which entered into force in March of last year, and which actually obliged all financial market participants in Europe to be more transparent on their ESG-related actions. This mechanically increased the number of asset managers being transparent on what they were doing from an ESG perspective, and it has also been a driver for more ESG factors considerations. But I think here, it's also important to make a distinction between ESG integration as a risk management tool, which can be considered as a baseline exercise to be done by all market players, as they now have to consider sustainability risk of their investments. And on the second hand, you have the optional decision to promote ESG characteristics, usually as a way to foster positive change. And I think the latter is something we will discuss in the following minutes, but this is where Vincent come from as well, where on the one hand, you have the risks really for good risk management purposes, but you also have this desire from asset manager and from investors to do well while doing good.
Thanks, Valerian. I think that brings us nicely to the next question, and I think it's a very key one. So the challenges, what do you see as the kind of the main challenges in implementing an ESG strategy? Vincent, you want to start with that one?
Yeah, sure. Well, this one is a key component, is a key question, because it's at the heart of the expansion of the market. So I believe to understand the challenges, we need to explain first the fundamental of sustainable investment. So especially today we are talking about the private debt market. So as a debt investor, and as opposed to equity sponsor, we do not elect a board of director. Okay, we do not own any shares. The only weapon we have, the only way we can convince the management of a company portfolio to embrace better sustainability practices is only our expertise. So through our expertise and to convince management to adopt a challenging sustainability roadmap, we structure what we call an ESG ratchet, and it's also known as sustainability linked loan or KPI loans. The purpose of this instrument is to generate positive outcomes. So they are meant to generate specific point of transition to support borrowers building a healthier society from an environmental, social, governance standpoint. So the borrower is incentivized to do something that they otherwise would not necessarily have done. In return, it can benefit from a lower credit spread. So this, since these instruments are pretty recent, not standardized, and not governed by any international framework, to me, the knowledge and capabilities don't yet exist to do it in a meaningful way. We still see some practices on the market that can jeopardize the credibility of this great debt instrument in terms of transition. So it raised concern for issuers and borrowers about greenwashing, and even for the asset manager that structured the ESG ratchet. So my point is, we really need to build the credibility of this instrument through expertise. Also, to build the credibility of this instrument, I also believe transparency is a key driver, and regulation will help the market to improve on this aspect going forward.
Yeah. Thank you. And I think also another challenge faced by the market at the moment is also linked to the lack of data. Indeed, as opposed to listed companies, which are required to provide a significant amount of information, the private market is usually less transparent and requires market players to make their own analysis for each potential investment. So for instance, on the liquid side, many market players will rely on data provided by third-party vendors for their ESG integration process. Here, market players often rely on in-house approaches where they create their own framework. The issue with these ESG frameworks is that they are time-consuming to make and expensive to set up for both private debt funds managers and also portfolio managers. Imagine private companies that have to file dozens of ESG due diligence questionnaires on non-financial reporting frameworks for many different shareholders, creditors, or even other potential investors. This takes time and resources to ensure highly similar but always different frameworks where non-financial information has to be found, repackaged, and reported for each investor. This burden put on the company can also delay the completion of these questionnaires or lead to approximation that can be detrimental to investors. Besides, as you might be aware, SFDR also requests market players making the promotion of ESG characteristics to report annually to their investors on how well they did on their on the basis of KPIs. However, relying on in-house ESG frameworks often makes it more difficult to demonstrate the positive results or effects of the strategy. To give you a concrete example, if you promote the investments in company with good ESG profile based on your own ESG rating, which is a rather common approach on the market at the moment, you will then be expected to be clear on the strategy and the methodology followed to be able to make such assessment. You should also be able to demonstrate that your approach has a material effect, meaning that not any company would actually fit the definition of a company with a good ESG profile. On the liquid side, if you rely on data from a third-party vendor, it is easy to demonstrate that your approach taken had a material impact on the investment universe by providing the ESG rating of the fund and of the investment universe, or alternatively, the share of companies which have been excluded from the investment universe. Here, the approach is not feasible, as it would mean that one should assess the entire investment universe, which is, as I just mentioned, impossible. Finally, bear in mind that even when such non-financial reporting is established, the quality of the non-financial data can always be questioned as the auditing of non-financial statements remain marginal, meaning that there is no real professional review of the proposed non-financial reportings. The issue with this is that different methodologies, for instance, on the calculation of a company's carbon footprint, can lead to very different results. This is where I join your point, Vincent, as it means that asset managers in the private debt universe indeed need to have resources internally with the necessary skills and knowledge to adequately analyze these reportings. This again means time and resources to spend.
Thank you, Valerian. Hopefully, there are not only challenges with the ESG in the ESG journey, there are also opportunities. So I'm wondering whether maybe Vincent, you could start with explaining a bit what you see as opportunities with the rise in focus on ESG in the private debt market at large. So covering asset managers, but also borrowers and corporates.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I agree with you that the ESG is a big opportunity for corporates and asset manager investors and the society in general. So for borrowers, the main opportunity is to get rewarded for their positive action, so greater appetite for their credit and potentially better terms. As I said before, when you structure an ESG ratchet, it means that your ESG strategy, your ESG agenda, your ESG roadmap as a borrower has been stamped by an investor, and the investor believes that your financial profile will be better going forward. So he is willing to reduce, you know, the credit spread on your debt because your financial profile is improving and you will be in better position to face the transition. A second opportunity from my point of view as a borrower is you can access expertise. Borrowers, especially SMEs, they don't have necessarily internally a CSR department or resources, a resource dedicated to ESG or CSR. So as a general at GP, we can act as an advisor on developing a clear agenda in collaboration with the borrower senior management. So it's also interesting from a GP standpoint, because when you discuss the ESG topics with senior management, you actually create a momentum and you improve the quality of your relationship. Also, and this is a message I give to borrowers anytime I structure an ESG ratchet or sustainability linked loan, is they can leverage on this product to access new business opportunities. A strong ESG proposition helps companies tap new markets and also expand into their current or existing ones. So we know that more and more stakeholders as employees, suppliers, their clients are looking at the sustainability practices of the company in the course of their business or before making any decision. So they can earn, for example, subsidies and government support as a corporate if you have good practices, boost employee motivation, and there is a lot of research that can prove that, attract talent through greater social credibility, and so on. So ESG is not just about risk, it's also about making sure that the company profile will be improving in the near future.
Yeah, I think also something that we didn't talk about yet, it's for asset managers, because asset managers also have some opportunities to have ESG products. And I think the first one and the most obvious one is the ability for them to raise funds. Because as previously mentioned, there is an increasing demand for ESG products, and which is not, I guess, from my point of view, which is not expected to vanish in the following years. Besides, as you know, the European Commission has set a clear objective to reorient capital flow towards sustainable investment. And to achieve this objective, we expect to see tax reduction mechanisms to be developed over time. So this is, for instance, the case already in Luxembourg with I mean, it's rather light, but there is a potential tax reduction when you can demonstrate that you have a certain share of taxonomy alignment. In addition to that, we also expect an increasing demand from national and supranational entities for these products. And this is also something we see already. They now ask market players if they do have some alignment with the EU taxonomy, or even if they do make sustainable investments aligned with the SFDR definition. So in a nutshell, here we foresee a combination of incentives and a growing demand from all kinds of investors. A second opportunity I wanted to mention here is actually linked to the data issue I mentioned earlier. So as you might be aware, the Non-Financial Reporting Directive, or NFRD, is currently being reviewed and will be extended under the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, or CSRD. The purpose of this directive is to require nearly 50,000 companies in Europe to include sustainability reporting along their financial reporting. The sustainability reporting will need to follow detailed standards, which are currently being developed by the EFRAG. The goal here is really to create a set of providing companies with a single solution meeting the need of investors and other stakeholders. The good thing here is that companies that are not subject to the directive will still be able to rely on these standards on a voluntary basis. I personally think that to attract financing, many companies not subject to the regulation will still rely on these standards, or at least some asset manager will require them to follow these standards to facilitate their own reporting obligation, notably under SFDR. This should greatly reduce the data gap and allow asset manager to more easily develop a robust ESG framework in the following years.
Thank you, Valerian. I think on this more positive note, it's already time to conclude this episode. I think it's fair to say, listening to what you have said today, that this is clearly a fundamental shift in the industry, affecting the private debt funds as all other asset classes on the private asset side. It comes with challenges, and firms will have different strategies to cope with that in terms of resources, addressing the data and reporting challenges and everything. But still, it's all in the making. So there's probably a lot more to come there. But then also it opens to opportunities for asset managers, as you just said, better fundraising on that side, but also for corporates and borrowers, better financing on their side, better ESG practice and access to expertise. So a very positive outcome or potential outcome for the industry. This is the end for today. Thank you both for joining us, and thanks to everyone for listening in. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and don't forget to join us for the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this Private Debt podcast. We hope you found it interesting. If you would like more information about our private debt expertise, we invite you to visit our website, www.achent.com. If you don't want to miss our latest episode, please feel free to subscribe to our podcasts, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.